Hello and welcome back to JLXP, a surprise episode because it is currently only 4:50 p.m. on a Saturday and Cloud9 just got 3-0'd by TL in the lower bracket final, officially eliminating them from the spring split and making it so they wouldn't go to MSI. Now, if you were to just go back 2.5 months, you would think that was unthinkable. So I wanted to take this episode and just talk about why C9 failed. So I think from a personal anecdote perspective, I was still a little surprised that it happened, even though all of the signs were there. When I was doing my finals, lower bracket finals prediction last week, I kind of talked myself into TL because I saw TL was this team that started the season slow, really low combined kills per minute, consistently ramped up throughout the regular season, had a really strong idea of how to create conflict in game. When they had advantages, they were really good at getting turrets or really just accelerating and ending games. And they also had, like, from being the least buddy team to being one of the most buddy teams, an incredible sense of progression throughout the split where they actually felt like they were learning and evolving as a team. Whereas I'd compare that to C9 and I'd say, so in week one, they smashed everyone in the lane and they went 3-0 and they looked like the super team. And then they struggled for pretty much the entire regular season. And then they smashed 100 Thieves in playoffs 3-0. Because they were up an average of 3,000 gold at 15 minutes throughout that entire series. And then they got swept by FlyQuest because they didn't get up 3,000 gold in the early game and win for free. And I could look back through the entire split and say, if this team doesn't win lanes really hard, they actually lose every game. But in the back of my head, I was like, but you know, maybe they'll just win lanes really hard. And I flip-flopped today before the series from what I had given as a previous JLXP prediction, 3-1 TL. I flipped it to a 3-0 C9 because I thought if they were ever going to really pull it together and if they were really ever able to focus up, this was, again, this was a feeling. I was like, then, you know, maybe they'll just win because the names on this roster have just been so appealing that I've wanted to give them the benefit of the doubt the entire year. But now that they are officially eliminated, now that they have lost 6 games in a row, and now that it is confirmed that in all 8 of their games this year, when they did not have a gold lead at 15 minutes, they never won. So, to the question, why did C9 fail? The lazy answer is because their mid-game and their teamwork were the worst in the league. But I think since we have some time on the podcast to explore, I wanted to just kind of talk about each player individually. I've read through some of the Reddit threads. I've seen some of the initial reactions on Twitter. And a lot of people are calling for Fudge's head. I'd say I've also seen people saying Blaber has been playing bad. There's been some Berserker doubters the entire year. There's been a lot of random Vulcan hate and the fact that he was, you know, a commonality between the FlyQuest failure last split and the C9 failure this split. And JoJo, I think, has probably seen the least amount of criticism. But I want to go individually, player by player, and figure out kind of what they did well, what they did poorly, or what I think they could have done well, if that makes sense, or what they've done well in the past. And then at the end, we're going to figure out where C9 goes from there. So, okay, we'll start with Fudge. Bad year. Really bad split for Fudge so far. I think he, in a lot of situations, and I'm going to end up defending Fudge based on the narrative, because I think the narrative is largely blaming Fudge for the team's failure, and I don't necessarily think that's fair. I think Fudge has been put into a lot of situations where he needs to kind of be the glue for the rest of the team comps that don't necessarily make that much sense. It was a little bit strange to me this series where in opportunities where they could get him a five pick counter pick against Impact, he just blind picked Renekton, did average in lane, then didn't do that much for the rest of the game. And then obviously in game three today, he counter picked with the Olaf. Then because Impact got the 1v3 kill, the game just looked super lost. For what it's worth, when we had Impact on the desk afterwards, he said that play was JoJo's fault and Fudge was just following. JoJo roamed top his Karma. Blabber went for the turret as Xin Zhao. He dropped aggro early. Olaf has to follow in. Fudge ends up being the one that's dying, and it kind of dooms his game. But that's just one instance for a larger season overall. I think if I were to break down some of the major criticisms towards Fudge that have been levied at him from other pro players in interviews throughout the split, I'd say some of those criticisms seem fairly accurate. They've said that he just plays far too conservatively, where unless it is absolutely obvious that he's going to win a trade, he's not going to trade. So players like Bwipo in their series would just bluff frequently, get small advantages in laning phase, and that would accumulate to a larger overall advantage in the game. And then Fudge just ends up being like, you know, 10, 15 CS behind. But then when the rest of the team isn't ahead later, it falls flat. I think there's honestly a reason for this. I think a lot of it would have to do with the way Fudge kind of ended up playing the game in 2023. Because throughout all of 2023, Cloud9 had a fairly free win condition with Berserker and Zven. And then also MNS actually being really, really good, even if they clearly had some interpersonal dynamic issues between MNS and the rest of the team. So as long as, for all of last year, as long as Fudge didn't run it down in laning phase, they were probably winning most of the games. So he probably spent a year like not really pushing boundaries in laning phase, because I know he's the type of player who's done that in the past. And for me, if I go all the way back to 2022 summer when he played top lane, they won that summer split. This is the one when they had Jensen, and I know I'm going back a little bit, but they won that split with Fudge like running the top lane meta with Fiora counterpicks and winning like Fiora, Camille, Aatrox, like triangles. And if I go back even further, like he was the guy in top lane that really helped popularize the scripted laning phase. Like he knows, you know, this is how you stack a wave on wave three. This is what you need to do to get a cheetah recall early on. This is how you save your TP. This is how you build these early. I know in the past he's done all these things, which does make it a little bit strange to me that he was so conservative. So without knowing exactly what things are like behind the scenes, I think Fudge's underperformance could be based on two different things. One could be he was just sacrificing too much for the team. This is the copium answer, where Berserker and Vulcan are actually playing fairly aggressive lanes a lot of the time where they need to have jungle attention in order to succeed. So Fudge knows he's not going to have many games played through him. JoJo is also a player who, at least last year on EG when he won MVP, really likes to play the game a specific way. Like he likes to win his lane so he can play it out. So a lot of what Fudge needed to do in the idealized version of this team was just not screw up and be there for team fights. Now, that's the copium reason that he was not winning lanes and not applying pressure. There could just be a level of losing motivation. I don't know for sure, because it's interesting to me, and I had this conversation with Papa Smithy last week after FlyQuest qualified for finals, and he was talking about bringing on Jensen. There's like a really big appeal to like calling players washed and just going for the next new thing. Fudge has a really long track record of being really good. So I think without a big internal deep dive from Cloud9 on why Fudge wasn't looking great, I think it would be a big mistake to prematurely get rid of Fudge, if that makes sense. Because he has the ability that he's shown in the past to be really good in lane and win both sides of matchups and use himself as a win condition. But that just isn't how this team was constructed whatsoever. So I don't know whether it has been a level of him falling off. If it has been a level of him falling off, figure out why intrinsically that is happening. If you think you can find a way to solve that, you bring him back. But I think as we get through this, I don't think any individual is necessarily the one who takes all the blame. So, okay, next player, Blaber. I've been a Blaber stan for like a year or two because I think going all the way back to one of the most dominant splits in LCS history, 2020 LCS Spring, when Cloud9 won 17-1, then COVID hit and MSI was canceled. That was like one of the best LCS teams ever. Blaber was a huge part of that. So was Niski. He is consistently one of the best junglers in the league. He consistently takes some of the most efficient jungle paths while still being incredibly involved in early game kills and assists. So just incredibly efficient, incredibly effective. This split though, he did struggle. This was the worst I've seen Blaber play in probably 5 years. And again, a lot of this has to do with what felt like a lack of cohesion. There were so many games where Cloud9 would have two or three winning lanes, and the way Blaber would try and convert that would be either taking six grubs or taking like one or two drakes. And then after that, it didn't feel like a very meaningful conversion. There were very rarely well-executed team-wide invades or dives that worked out well. It was very much three laners doing their own thing and Blaber also doing his own thing while knowing that his lanes were kind of winning. And he even talked about it in his losers interview today where Emily asked him, you know, what in your mind, what went wrong? And he just said our mid game sucked. And yeah, I absolutely agree. Their mid lane did suck. Trying to figure out why is definitely much more complicated, but looking at Blaber in particular, it didn't feel like he had a clear idea of how he was actually going to win the game when they loaded in, which in past years, I feel like he had a much stronger idea of that answer. For what it's worth, I do think their drafts were very early game focused very often. And the actual way that Cloud9 actually wins those games is if they're 3,000 gold ahead, in which case soloing grubs or soloing Drake is not the way you win the game. So I think he just misidentified how to win in a lot of the situations in which they lost. JoJo, really interesting one, actually. He got a little bit targeted in draft towards the end of playoffs. And he definitely has like this halo effect right now because he's so talented and he's so young and he found so much success early on that it's like he can do no wrong. But the majority of C9's wins this year were actually with him on Azir. And then outside of that, it was Nico and Ahri. So once the like, oh, let's just ban Nico Ahri and Azir's a global ban for JoJo, it's going to take away a lot of their avenues for winning, which speaks as much to JoJo as it does the rest of the team. I still think he was the best performer of the five on C9 because when he was on Azir, he was strong enough individually 1v1 to get an advantage. It's an easy champion for Blaber to assist with because Azir can actually start those lane ganks if he wants to flip people. He can also initiate his own team fights. Like when you are on Azir, you can be the win condition. And when he's on Yone, it's a lot harder. He needs a lot more setup. When you're on Karma, you can carry, but you have to kind of have a really good amount of being linked up with your teammates. And Azir was this like unique pick that allowed JoJo to win games for Cloud9. And then once that was gone, I think of all the teams in playoffs, the Azir disable affected Cloud9 the most. Moving on to Berserker Vulcan. I don't want to belabor this too much. There's a lot of comments about whether or not Berserker was him, whether he was not him. This, as well, was Berserker's worst split in the LCS. I do think he was more inconsistent in lane, partially because he was trying harder to win lane, because their team fighting or their mid game were so poor that, like, after you just lose enough games, when you feel like you're a little bit ahead, your instinct is, well, I just have to be more ahead the next game, which then has him taking more risks in lane, which will actually oftentimes put him further behind because he's trying too hard and he's going to have a bad time overall. So the Berserker one's really weird for me because there's a lot of team fights I can look at and I'm like, man, Berserker was in a really dumb spot there. But then you can also go back and say, okay, why was he in a dumb spot? Well, it's because like Fudge and Blabber and JoJo like all hard committed on someone after a Vulcan hook. And then like, okay, Berserker's 1,200 units away getting pounded by the enemy jungler and the fight's over. They lose. I think there's an element in here where I think losing Zven was way bigger than any of us realized it would be in terms of Zven's outlook on the game and pointing Berserker around a little bit. And then that just ends up having a snowball effect where no one on the team actually has an extremely clear idea of what they're doing. And I'll talk about Vulcan here a bit too, because he just had a really up and down split. He had a couple really strong Nautilus games. I think his Nami's actually really good, but Lucian Nami's just like not really good. So it's hard to win that many games on it. And then if he's on engaged supports, that's not something that Berserker has actually had that much success with. If we think about the majority of his success was with Winsome or Zven, and those were, by and large, strong Enchanter players, not strong engaged players, and the meta has shifted away from that. So there was just a little bit of anti-synergy with that. So to the overall question, now that I've kind of gone roll by roll and hopefully sustained a level of coherence, I don't know if this Cloud9 roster can work as these five players, but I also, and this is a dumb answer, like I still kind of feel like if they change their approach a little bit, they could find a lot more success. And here's what I mean by that. Something really weird must have been happening behind the scenes for this team, because like they literally started week one dominating lane phase and picking team compositions that didn't make that much sense if they weren't super far ahead. And then 2.5 months later, they felt like the exact same team. And it's not like they had been cursed with success. You know what I mean? It's not like they had went 12-0 and in playoffs, oh no, now it's too late to pivot. Like, I think they had an opportunity to pivot after week four when there was a 2-week LCS break. And they just didn't. They just kept ramming their heads up against the wall, thinking that enough cracks were in the wall and they were just going to break through it soon enough. So let's try and think of an ideal style for this Cloud9 to work with these players. I think you still want to play through JoJo. I really do. And this is part of where I feel like it broke. Blabber really felt like he had the most success, I think, and maybe he didn't think this, but I think Blabber felt like he had the most success when he is on a farm heavy carry jungler. But JoJo needs someone to play Armeo Sejuani. You know, he needs someone to play like Inspired, who is going to sack more of his early game, who is going to get his mid laner or his 80 carry ahead, and then just be a really solid team fighter. I think JoJo, in that case, also needs to work on his control mages, because that wasn't necessarily how he took over the majority of games, but that's the type of team that they would need to be able, like, yes, sometimes you can run around with double melees and Sejuani and still take over the game, but other times you're going to need to just mirror matchup control mages and win team fights, because sometimes that's what the draft is going to dictate. I think from there, I think if you're on control mages like Orianna or Azir for JoJo, that will allow Vulcan to also play engage champions when necessary and have enough team fight structure to actually be able to protect Berserker even without an enchanter. I think once you have that mid jungle kind of worked out and dialed, you should end up trying to win most of your games through JoJo still. I do think Fudge needs to play a little bit more aggressive and needs to counterpick a lot more, because I think their teamfight structure should ideally come from whatever Blabber and JoJo have. Like, they should be on things that can scale well because they are two of their best players, and they need to apply some of that teamfight structure, at least in the current meta. This is just my opinion. Vulcan can still play in Gators when necessary. Berserker can still get things done in teamfights. And if Fudge ends up getting counterpick, he's going to create map pressure himself, just off having strong matchups, and that will buy enough time to actually have some level of 5v5 team fighting. I think what they thought was going to happen is that they could just hands diff people enough in early game and you win enough of those games that it's just over. That statement could also be completely irrelevant if none of these guys, which is a weird thing to say because, like, literally everyone on this team is an MVP or a multi-time LCS champion, but it felt like none of these guys knew exactly how to win the game. I think most of that, and I hope I'm not repeating myself too much, is because the drafts did not have cohesion unless the team was far ahead. So because the team did not get far ahead, the drafts had no cohesion and the team was lost. The way you fix that going forward, if they keep them together, is it sounds boring, because you feel like you're going to lose if you're in NA like this, you got to pick more freaking scaling, and you have to be willing to give Fudge counterpick. I think a lot of people are calling for Licorice. Who knows? Maybe that could happen. I think if you look at the overall resumes of both of these players, they both have really good career accolades. They're both able to play skill matchups and counterpicks. You could say, yes, Licorice's form in 2023 summer is better than Fudge's form now, but I don't think that guarantees that Fudge's form is better in summer split of 2024, if that makes sense. I think the number one thing, if this team stays together, that they have to do is they have to change the way they play. And gosh, this is going to sound so stupidly, like, repetitive, but I had this idea of what happened in their series today against Team Liquid. And they overgrouped, just bear with me, they overgrouped a huge amount in that game. And to me, when you overgroup, it's either because you don't necessarily know how to win, which makes sense because of their team comps, but two, you overgroup because you're trying to help. Like, you're trying to show, like, oh, look at me. Like, I'm willing to be there for the team. I'm willing to sacrifice. Like, JoJo at one point in his Hui game just, like, recalled from mid and just ran straight bot. And I think they ended up losing that fight. But, like, he was there to support his bot lane because they were going to get dove because other bad stuff had happened in the jungle. But in the meantime, like, as the one who needed to be the focal point of that team, like, gave APA like two free plates and they lost the fight anyway. So they, I think by the very end, were all trying too hard in game to help each other. But if we zoom out, they weren't synced up enough to actually accept different roles and help each other in that way. Because now that we're at the end of it, the default strengths of all five of these players does not work well in a five-man team. So one or two of them do need to modify the way they play, actually play something they are weaker at, and then the overall team will be able to find more success. And for what it's worth, like, they still did finish third. That would get them to Worlds. I know with three MVPs and all these multi-time LCS champions, you want more than that. But, like, I think in their mind, the reason they kept playing like this is, like, oh, little tweaks. Little tweaks will get us over the edge. Because they were better than the majority of LCS, even with all these problems. Okay. Other scenarios, though. And this is the one that, for those of you who made it to the 25-minute mark, you've probably been screaming to hear, is like, what if they just brought Sven back? He is available. I think, again, you never know exactly what's going on in a team. And maybe with the current support meta, if Sven was playing support and running around throwing Nautilus hooks at walls, like, we'd be having a totally different conversation. But his overall understanding of the game, his winning LCS championships on multiple roles, he got to 1 KLP as AD carry this offseason in Korea. And I think he's probably willing to play AD carry or support again, especially since not finding a team in spring and just having the hunger to compete. I'm not shocked if there's conversations between Sven and C9 in the offseason of him coming back as AD carry or support. It will depend on how their conversations go with Berserker, on how their conversations go with Vulcan, how their conversations go with Fudge, Blabber, for their own culpability in what went wrong and where the path could be forward. So that's pretty much what I wanted to talk about. I wanted to figure out specifically why C9 failed. I just wanted to talk through a lot of my thoughts. I see I'm 27 minutes in. So I appreciate everybody for watching. This was a surprise episode. I'm not going to make any promises that I'm going to be doing this all the time, but I do want to have the ability to just kind of talk for a bit when I feel like there's something interesting to talk about. So this C9 team, to recap, never won a single game when they were even or behind at gold at 15 minutes. And as meme of a stat as that is, it shows the story of their split. They did not have cohesive team compositions. They did not have strong ideas on how to play in the mid game, and they did not have a strong innate ability to team fight together. They did have still the best early game of all teams in the LCS. That takes player skill, even if you're drafting for it. So I think the simplest fix for NetSplit is to draft more scaling, but they're probably making roster changes because that's the world we live in. And there are very likely some big things boiling beneath the surface that we do not know about. So those are the things, those inter-team dynamics are the things they need to solve first. And then they need to go from there. So let me know in the comments what you think went wrong with C9. Try not to go that crazy on individual players because I think so much of it is interconnected. And I am, on a personal note, very disappointed that this team isn't going to MSI just because the level of excitement around all these players was so high. The star power of JoJo, Blabber, and Berserker is so high. Having them not represent the region is disappointing. What's not disappointing about it, though, is the fact that they didn't earn it, so they shouldn't go. That goes without saying. But that's just why you have to play the games. You cannot win an LCS split with resumes alone. And that might be the lesson long-term of this 2024 Cloud9 team. So anyways, thank you for watching. That's it for this episode of JLXP, and I'll see you next time.